Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
There's a lot of conversations now as to whether we need the state of disaster that has been put in place. And we're starting to see pushback from a lot of countries and a lot of people, where they are saying at a time of crisis and of disaster, we absolutely are prepared to relinquish some of our rights to government. But then when it is over, government needs to hand them right back. Sanusha Naidu, senior researcher, associate at the Institute for Global Dialogue. Good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning, Howard. All the best for 2022.
Thank you very, very much, and to you as well. So it's a very, very fine balance, isn't it? Because at a time of crisis, we actually are very quick to hand some of our powers to government and say, help us deal with this. But then when it starts to diminish, when the dangers start to diminish, then we need to get them back. Otherwise, things get a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's a difficult one to say that it's black and white. I think the problem is that you're in a social contract between citizens and states. So the state-citizen relationship is based on a set of rights and duties. And so you have certain rights that the state needs to fulfill, and by the same measure, the state has certain corresponding duties to society and to citizens and vice versa. So in other words, when you think about it, it's a very social contract theorist approach, you know, your Hobbesian, your Locke, your Rousseau kind of a basis of what are the rights that you accede to the state or to the authority of the state, and those rights would mean that you expect a corresponding fulfilling duty by the state. So a very simple thing would be security, be questions around rights that you would feel that you can accede to the state, but the state in return provides you with a safe and a much more secure society. In the case of the National State of Disaster and the Management Act, it's really around the question of how the state intervenes and tries to ensure that people's rights are not necessarily infringed upon, but it's a national security issue. So it just comes back to the question of your national security interest and your national security issue. The state will then come in to try and stabilize the disruptor. And in this case, the disruptor is the COVID-19 virus, and hence the pandemic. And then it starts to put into place. First, it will be about, like we've seen in South Africa, where we've had very serious lockdown measures, lockdown 5, etc. But at the same time, we didn't really have mandatory mask wearing. That came in subsequently later. And so here's the point: that relationship between state and citizen, and vice versa, has to be one where you feel that when you accede your rights in order for the state to deal with a disaster, or say in the case of conflict, whether it's interstate conflict or intrastate conflict. In this case, it is a form of a new security threat, which is a pandemic. The state is the natural actor to try and stabilize and provide certain guarantees around safety and security. The problem it is now is that if the numbers that we are seeing are coming down in terms of it's no longer going to be a pandemic, but rather we're moving towards an epidemic. And I think this morning it was quite interesting to listen to the WHO say that in Europe, there's a possibility that they will be moving away from a pandemic and that they're coming to almost a kind of post-Omicron.
Right. Like an endemic, when the disease becomes almost endemic to the population.
Yeah. Mm. So the point that one has to understand is, in any society, it is an implicit contract. But then the question is, when do you want your rights back? When do you feel that there's an infringement of your rights? And we're talking about the state of disaster. We're talking about when does society feel that the state the government needs to basically now put the state of disaster to rest. In other words, take it out. It's no longer, I wouldn't say relevant, but it's no longer a need to be in the state of disaster management. It also means that once you move beyond that, the state has to be very clear, very careful, very, you know, coherent, that when you move off that state of disaster, you have to have a society that's willing to also self-govern itself or manage itself. How do you prevent a relapse? You know, it's very much like when you wean somebody off a resuscitator machine. You have to make sure that they are able to breathe on their own. So in the same way, the state, or in my opinion, the state will say, okay, so we go off this because the numbers are showing us that we've kind of reached the kind, not even flattening the curve, but we've kind of gone to the decline, and we are basically confident enough that we can start thinking about easing off on the state of disaster and the management act. But then again, the challenge is now for us as society to be much more vigilant about our own behavior. And I think that is what's really a big question for most societies, is that when does the state become overbearing? When does the state become almost overprotective, in inverted commas? And when does it feel that this is no longer just about whether the pandemic has now subsided and we're moving
into and it almost becomes sort of taking advantage of the power that they have.
Yeah, and the challenge there is that anything now can tinker it off. Anything can be a catalyst to say we need to stay in the state of emergency, a state of disaster, in a state of disaster and management, because there's a sense that the state has a lot of control. But at the same time, I think there are other things that we also got to think about in terms of, for example, and the one thing that I found strangely bizarre, if that makes sense, is when the Department of Basic Education didn't want to publish the matric results because they said it may be an infringement of the Privacy Act, the POPI Act. And I thought to myself, you know, you basically, you're not, if you're putting names or you're putting numbers, at some point, the newspaper doesn't keep it, right? Or they have to get rid of it. So the challenge is you've got to find a way to balance it out. And I just think what's happening now, not just in the context of us in South Africa, but I think across the world as well, if you're looking at what's happening in Paris, if you're looking at what's happening in the UK, in Canada, and in other parts of the world, where there's a pushback and saying, we don't want more tighter restrictions on COVID or on pandemic dynamics, etc. People are feeling very, very claustrophobic. They want to have some kind of normality return to their everyday life. But of course, the challenge is how do we live now and not assume that we've comfortably managed the wave or managed the crest of COVID? Because I don't think we're going to ever be the same again. That's the problem. That anything can now spur on a pandemic, and if we are not careful enough, the state becomes much more draconian, or the state will become much more interventionist. And that is what has happened here, is that the whole thing has been set into motion in terms of the fact that the state now can use these legislation, but it can use it for all other purposes as well.
Right. And in fact, we saw that because we saw some very irrational behavior, the closing of the beaches, the smoking bans. All of those were completely that you could only buy one type of item and not another. It just made absolutely no sense. Before I continue, Sunisha, or I ask you, I just want to put it out to listeners. 34519 or 0618951019. Do you think that we are at the stage that the state of disaster should be rescinded? Do you think that government has gone too far or is now taking this too far? What are your thoughts, or is it still helpful for us to have this in place so that the pandemic or the end of the pandemic can be managed? I'd love your thoughts on it. Sunisha, the other aspect to it, and in fact, I spoke to Dr. Anton Meiberg on the on a COVID podcast yesterday, and we were talking about mask mandates, and his concern is, and he's very, very conservative, being a pulmonologist, being somebody who's in the space, sees very ill people, but he now believes that we've reached a stage that we could be removing masks, certainly from outdoor events, and if you meet people outdoors, that you don't need necessarily to be wearing masks. And he said one of the problems with that is if we don't remove it, then people stop listening anyway. And then if we need it again, and you know, you can't put it back in place because it's already in place. So in other words, people have got to trust. There's almost this contract between government and the community to say, we trust you to make laws that are rational because then we'll listen to them.
I mean, it's a difficult one. I mean, it depends where you come from. If you're coming from a clearly question of my rights are my rights, and that's what you believe, and you feel that the state cannot infringe on those rights. It's a very, very interesting debate that this is my right and this is what I can do. And if you basically saying, and if I understood you correctly, Howard, you're saying that if you are able to not use in outdoor spaces, you don't have to use your mask. But then, of course,
That's what he was saying. He was saying the law right now is that we have to wear masks outdoors.
Yeah.
And Dr. Myberg was saying, in fact, it shouldn't be the law. He can't argue with the law because it's the law. But when I asked him the question, should we be wearing masks outside? He said, his view is we're fast reaching a stage that we don't have to wear them. But government needs to change the law. We can't change them. Therefore, and if they don't change them, then it's very difficult to get people, if it gets bad again, suddenly to say, wear your masks outdoors. Because it was always the law. They didn't change it away. So now what are we meant to do? So it's got to be rational.
I understand what he's saying, right? So you're saying that if we are outside and we essentially don't need to wear masks because we are fast approaching that kind of space where we don't need to wear the mask, we're breathing in fresh air and so forth. What happens when you're in a crowded space and the air is not as fresh?
Right.
I'm not saying that you're in a crowded space. It's open air, right? And people are saying, I'm open. I'm in the open air. I don't need to wear my mask. But then it becomes a super spreader event of some other pathogen that has emerged. And so the challenge then would be, how do you get people to go back? The problem is people are reactive to behavior. The problem is that we didn't need to be in the situation that we are in if all other aspects of our socio-economic and our societal spaces were in harmony with each other. In other words, people just don't have good etiquette sometimes. When you're in a shopping mall, people are sitting on top of you. When you are, yesterday in the beach, when I was there, people didn't care. They were walking into you. And so I got very nervous and I still had my mask on.
Yeah.
Because somebody walking into you will sneeze on you at some point.
Yeah.
So where do you find the balance? And I think this idea of our rights must trump that. I'm not saying that we have to continuously be in a state of disaster. But at what point do we also trust society to behave in a logical and sensible way, in a rational way? So the laws need to be rationalized, but the laws are there because sometimes people don't behave rationally.
And science says, absolutely, yes, it's enough. And the reason why the UK and others support this is because the latest data supports it. So we definitely are seeing, and as you said, you were watching the World Health Organization saying we are reaching the an endemic stage.
Let me put it to you this way, right? It was always fascinating when the UK traveled to China where people would actually wear masks.
Anyway, all the time
on their flights going to other countries. And it was such an unusual behavior for people who weren't necessarily wearing masks as a kind of out of personal choice or whatever. It was always quite amusing to see, these societies in Asia, some of them wearing the mask all the time. And now that we've entered this COVID process, we now realize that the mask has become almost mandatory. So I agree with you. The problem is when we reach that point where we no longer have to conform to behavior that has been very directive by the state and so forth, the problem I think we're going to have is how much of what we've seen people are going to inculcate in behavior. If we are able to be responsible enough to say it's that I will be responsible in a shopping mall or in an outside event. I'll respect your space. It doesn't happen that way. I'm sorry about it. As much as the data can tell us everything, it's also about social behavior.
That's so interesting what you're saying, because it's almost as though I anticipate you that you'd come from a completely different angle. And really what you're saying is that the reality of it is simply that not everybody can be, in inverted commas, trusted to respect that social contract. That's really what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm saying that I'm not saying that not everybody can be trusted to respect the social contract. I think people respect the social contract. The problem is that I think people just don't know how to respect space or respect other people's space. I think in a society that in a world that we've become very, very individualistic, it's always about me, myself, and I.
Absolutely.
And we when we talk about these rights, we talk about it not in a collective at times. We talk about it very much as an individualistic approach. My rights, you know, when you listen to the language and you listen to the imaging of, and you disaggregate the imaging of the language, it's never about the community's rights. It's always, it's my rights are being infringed. My rights are this. My rights are that. And I think that my is perhaps why we have to be careful that as much as the state can also be quite a difficult actor at times in enforcing the laws and enforcing the regulations, I think the problem is, as well, is society also has to find its space to be able to say, I do this to the collective. I mean, can you imagine? We don't have to go far. All we have to do is look at how people live in such close quarters to each other in informal settlements.
Mm, mm.
You know, so they could be in an open air space, but there's no kind of, you know, distancing for them to be able to say, I don't have to wear my mask. On top of that, the sanitation, the water, the deplorable conditions make it even harder. How do you get, so that's the responsibility as well for state to say, how
right,
do I get
so it's again back to that social contract. It's that.
Right.
It's
so
that,
people will be in anger of this. And so, you know, they rip the mask out for all kinds of significant symbolism. But at the same time, I think that if you're not sorting out the situation, and I think the problem we also have is we have to be very clear about whose rights are we exercising. Because we live in a very hierarchical society. We live in a class-based society. Mm. And so sometimes we ventilate certain people's rights and not others.
Very, very interesting and lots of food for thought. We went way over time, but I couldn't help myself because this is a fascinating conversation. Sunisha Naidu, thank you as always for your input, for your thought-provoking conversation.